Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast, where trauma survivors become healthy thrivers. Each month, we'll feature a theme in the trauma recovery and empowerment field to promote your recovery, healing, and learning how to build dreams. Here's your host, Karen Robinson, transformational coach and therapist.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast. Today, our guest is Cassie Christopher, who is a registered dietitian and nutritionist. And she's going to talk to us today about how she helps women, generally over 45, find the courage to trust themselves around food, because a lot of us do not, if we're honest. And she helps teach how to have more supportive eating choices so that we can have ultimate health and happiness. So Cassie, welcome to our podcast. Maybe we could get you started with saying anything about yourself I didn't ask about or mention, and also talk about the free offer you have for our guest today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here, and I love to talk about food and our relationship with food and creating that supportive relationship and really finding joy in eating rather than, one of my clients said it perfectly, rather than seeking joy with food. So I'm excited to dive into that. And, you know, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share with your audience. If anyone is struggling with eating, you know, they hit on this episode because they know they need help with it. I want to invite you all to go to cassiechristopher.net/free. And that's C-A-S-S-I-E, Christopher, kind of like the common boy's name, .net/free. And you can get my emotional eating roadmap. It's called You're Done Dieting, But Still Want to Heal Emotional Eating. And this is going to help you figure out what you need to do, the best next step for you to heal your food struggles. So if you have felt obsessive about food, if you've struggled with overeating, emotional eating, binging, you know, any of the above, then you'll want to go grab this guide. So I believe it will help you understand where to start, and you're going to see it is not dieting, and we'll talk more about that today.
So you were thinking of me when you made this a tool, right? When you wrote that up, you were thinking of me. That's so kind of you.
Yes. I mean, I have my own story with emotional eating, which I'm so happy to share. That's how I know, you know, what we need. And really, if you're out there struggling right now, what you probably need is hope to understand that healing your relationship with food is even possible. Because if you're anything like me or the women I work with, you have been on and off diets for maybe decades and nothing has ever worked. And you get the message that it's your fault and you're no good. And I'm here to tell you that is not true. There's a good reason for your struggle and there is hope.
Oh, that was so excellent how you said all that. Yeah, so we do want to hear about your journey to what led you to pick this career, you know, whatever you feel comfortable to share. So go ahead and do that.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I come from a long line of emotional eaters. My mom will joke about stopping at convenience stores to buy those ice cream drumsticks when she was pregnant with me. So, you know, I was an emotional eater from the womb, and that stuck around. I didn't really notice it was an issue, though, until I was in graduate school studying nutrition, of all things. And I was that typical type A perfectionist, you know, didn't know how to do things less than perfectly. And I wasn't dealing with the stress of school or my emotions. And that generally was something that, you know, was a lifelong habit until that point, not dealing with my emotions, but rather eating them. But it came to a head for me when I was in grad school and I had this really intense panic attack. Anyone who's had a panic attack, you know, I've had them my whole life. This was the worst one, where I woke up in the middle of the night standing up. You know, I woke up standing up. So there's your first clue, something is wrong. In the middle of my bedroom, screaming. I was standing up screaming. I don't know how I got out of bed. You know what I mean? Like, just, and I actually woke up screaming. My poor husband also woke up to me screaming and was trying to, you know, tell me you're okay and calm me down, which just made it worse because I came to with somebody trying to, you know, calm me down. So that is a moment I will never forget. And that is when I realized there is something wrong here. I don't see my classmates having these panic attacks, although many of them were very stressed. Like, I'm not handling this well. And that led to me realizing I had trouble with anxiety and starting to make the connection between the anxiety and eating. But I still thought it was my fault. I still thought I just wasn't handling things well. And so I did what any student studying nutrition does. I went on a diet. I was learning all about, I was learning all about diets. And at the time, you know, it was definitely in the midst of the beginning of the low carb craze, and food allergies were very popular. Everyone I knew had some sort of food sensitivity, and we were cutting out whole food groups and all of this. So I was back and forth on these diets, and I was cutting things out in order to be healthier. And I also felt that I weighed too much, and in order to be healthy, I had to weigh less. And I was kind of going back and forth between a various diet and maybe emotional eating, maybe binge eating, you know, eating a lot and not caring about what I ate at all and justifying it with, well, none of this really matters anyways. And that actually continued on for several years. It wasn't until I was a new mom and I found myself in a very stressful place in my life again, that I realized something had to change, because I wasn't able to show up for my daughter the way that I wanted to, because my eating was causing me pain. It was making an autoimmune condition worse. And so I wasn't able to, you know, hold her for as long as I wanted to hold her and things like this. And so I decided, you know, it's time to figure this out. I knew dieting wasn't the answer. But what I didn't know was the impact that a trauma history can have on eating. And this is something I would love to share with your audience. While I steal a drink of water. So what you've heard so far in my story is that I was blaming myself, right? Like, I thought it was my fault. I knew better. I knew what to do, but I wasn't doing it. So what's going on here? And I became aware of what's called the window of tolerance model by Dan Siegel. And I think this describes what happens with food so, so well. So for anyone who isn't aware, let me describe it to you quickly. And I wonder if you will see your behavior, you know, on this model. So we all have this place where we can be cool, calm, and collected. Some people call it the comfort zone. Some people call it the window of tolerance. I call it our zone of trust, because that is the place where we can trust ourselves around food. We can have, you know, chocolates out and eat a piece, right? And not feel like we have to finish the whole bar or feel out of control around food. But things happen to push us outside of our zone of trust, to where we don't feel like we can trust ourselves around food. And when we're outside of that zone of trust, that's when we might do some emotional eating, where we're using food to numb our feelings or to zone out, you know, that trance eating. Maybe that's where we binge, where you eat and eat until you're uncomfortable. That's where you might also get really rigid about what you eat and say, like, I need a diet. I need to do this black and white eating. I need to be weighing myself all the time. Like, that rigidity is actually another sign of being outside of your zone of trust. You might blame yourself. You might struggle with dissociating from your feelings by eating. You might develop an eating disorder. And so trauma impacts you because it makes it so much easier to leave that zone of trust, that place where you can trust yourself around food. And it can make it harder to get back into that place. And so if you have a history of trauma, then it might be easier for you to develop a more difficult relationship with food, where you're using food in this way. And that has shown out in research around eating disorders and actually obesity research as well, that trauma can have this impact. So all that to say, recognizing that the way trauma has impacted our brains and our relationship with food is important to healing, because it's not your fault. But also, I believe that dieting, as I've seen in my clients who've been dieting for decades, is its own form of trauma. Now, there's not a lot of research on this yet, but
I believe it.
I would love to be a part. If anyone out there is a researcher, hit me up. I've got the people for you to study. Because you know, getting on the scale and having the scale tell you that you're not good enough and you're not worthy again and again and again is like some, like abuse, right? And depriving yourself, like neglecting your needs because the diet says you can't fulfill them, right? Trauma. And so that all or nothing dieting is kind of how I think of it. It disconnects us from our body. It tells us that we're not good enough unless we're following the plan perfectly. We're a failure unless we're doing things perfectly. But it also impacts our biology in that same way that trauma impacts our biology and can rewire our brain. Dieting can as well. There's this phenomenon called forbidden fruit phenomenon. I wonder if anyone out there has experienced it, where you have the bad food, and you can't see me, but I'm using air quotes here for bad. And we believe that the food is bad, and then it becomes a forbidden fruit and we want it even more. I'm curious, have you ever experienced that?
Ice cream. Oh my gosh.
Yes. Right. I mean, everyone has their kind of forbidden food. And it's so fascinating to me to watch my clients go from, you know, I'm thinking of a woman who Diet Coke was her forbidden fruit. You know, and it was lower in sugar and all this, but she felt like, oh, it's not good for me. I shouldn't eat it. But she loved, or drink it rather, but she loves Diet Coke, and she would drink it every day and she would feel bad every single day. But what's so interesting is when you think something is off limits, it's forbidden, you want it even more. Does that mean you can never eat healthily? No. Here's what happened with this woman in Diet Coke, which I think is so interesting, is once she started connecting back to her body and really unlearning everything that she was taught by that all or nothing diet culture, she was able to see that, wow, actually the Diet Coke hurts her joints. She was actually able to see the impact that Diet Coke had on her. And she was able to say, you know what? I don't want that joint pain. I'm not going to have that Diet Coke most days. She was able to set boundaries around it because it wasn't forbidden. She could have it if she wanted it, but she realized it actually wasn't helping her. So, you know, one example, just because you have this, the kind of effects of dieting in your life, it doesn't mean that, you know, you can't overcome them and have a healthier relationship with something like Diet Coke. Now, she might occasionally have Diet Coke because she just, honest to God, loves it. But she knows, hey, like she might have some consequences, and that's okay because we don't have to eat perfectly. And the other thing I wanted to say about all or nothing dieting is I think many people feel like we're addicted to food, and food addiction is a controversial topic. And the research around it is controversial, but the thing that is very well established in research is that this cycle of restricting, and then, you know, you restrict for a while and then you indulge really heavily, and you restrict for a while and you indulge really heavily. Well, that heavy indulgence can actually change your gut bacteria, and it can change the pathways in your brain to mirror what happens in drug addiction. So it changes your brain, it changes your gut to resemble addiction. It doesn't have to stay that way. I truly believe that. But you really may be addicted to food as a result of, you know, the trauma, the all or nothing dieting. So it can get really heavy. And then there's all this shame on top of it from not fitting societal standards of beauty, or not, you know, eating the way that you feel like you should. And you know, those should words are always showing shame. And so this is an area where if you're struggling, it can feel really, really bad. And it feels so much better to just go eat a cookie. So it makes sense why we might even be stuck. But there is hope, remember.
I hope is like my favorite word. It's probably the cornerstone of my work. And I have a bot for my little side gigs, and the bot, her name is Hope as well.
Oh, I love it. That is so cool.
Yeah, she's so cute. I have to show her to you sometime.
Yes, please do.
I'm resonating with everything you're saying. I think the one of the areas where we can really see the all or nothing thinking is around food, because food is unique, like crack cocaine. You don't have to have an all or nothing relationship, because once you let it go, you don't need it to live. But food, right. We need nourishment to live. So it's like, you know, that balance and that gray area of not making it all or nothing is really tricky, so, especially if it's been your coping skill.
Yes, it is. And the messages I think that we get are just don't eat it, just don't do it. And like with the forbidden fruit phenomenon, well, that makes it more appetizing, more appealing, and you can't escape these foods. Oftentimes the foods that we're indulging in are ones that have been engineered in a lab somewhere to make you keep coming back for it and coming back for it. And so it's easy to feel like nothing can be done, or, you know, to be sucked in. I think it's also easy to be sucked in to, I think there's a lot of people who prey on those who are struggling with their eating and sell quick solutions and things like that. And the truth is, I mean, I hope in the way that I presented this so far, you can see there is no magic bullet. There is no quick solution. The answer really has to be in connecting to yourself and calming your body. And I call this developing the courage to trust. So you can trust yourself around food, and there are some things that you need to heal before you believe that and you feel like that. And the first thing is calming down your nervous system. You know, I mentioned at the beginning that my story really started with a lot of anxiety, had that intense panic attack, and that led me into researching the stress hormone cortisol and understanding the role that it played in taking us outside of that zone of trust where we can trust ourselves around food and leaving us feeling, I mean, exhausted and anxious and angry and disconnected. And so when we can calm the nervous system to tell ourselves we're safe, you know, we're okay, then we can start to get back in that zone of trust and make the choices that we want to make. One really easy way to calm your nervous system, and this is me putting my dietitian hat on, so it may not be something your audience is thinking about very often, is actually eating regularly. That is my simplest and easiest tip. I mean, easy for some people, not for other people. I get it. Like, we get busy. But if you eat regularly throughout the day, especially if you tend to be someone who struggles with eating in the evening, it's going to help balance your blood sugar throughout the day and just calm things down, that your body will know, oh, I'm being cared for throughout the day. Your body can trust you, right, to nourish it. And so then you can start to trust your body to, you know, crave the things that are going to be nourishing rather than the things that are going to be numbing. So calming the nervous system, there's a lot of ways to do that. But my best tip for everyone out there is to focus on eating regularly. The second way to develop this courage to trust yourself around food is to really lean into self-compassion. And I love Dr. Kristen Neff's research on self-compassion. Yes, all my research nerds out there can go to her website, and she just has all of her papers in one spot. You can read through them. It is so fun. You're like, whoa, self-compassion is so powerful. It can change the world. I really believe that. Mm-hmm. And it can change your relationship with food. So two of the big issues that I see when women are struggling with trusting themselves around food is that all or nothing thinking I mentioned, where they're feeling like a failure all the time, and everything is seen through the lens of not being good enough, not measuring up, and secondly, self-criticism. And both of these things add to more discomfort, more emotion that then they will numb with food. So the thought patterns are really a vicious cycle when it comes to eating. And the beautiful thing is self-compassion is the best of all balms for these problems, because when you're kind to yourself and when you're seeing the little wins, right, with all or nothing thinking, we're either a failure or a success, and like 99% of the time we're a failure. And so when you can be nice to yourself and see the little wins, you can build momentum on that. You can stop the criticism. One easy way to do this, and again, I say easy, but I think I keep meaning simple, is I love May I Be Kind. When I'm thinking in my mind, and this has been, I'm sharing with the group here, lately, when I lay down in bed, I notice my belly fat hanging over my pajamas. And I'm like, oh, what the heck has happened to my body? I could take that moment to tailspin, right? And think about how much my body has changed and how I'm not happy about it. And what are other people going to think? And I'm a dietitian and I help people with this, right? Like, it could go somewhere. And I stop those thought patterns that are destructive and lead to pain with the simple statement, may I be kind.
Mm. It's been really powerful.
It's been so powerful for me. So, you know, as an example to anyone out there, if you're reaching in the cabinet and that starts that mean streak, you know, may I be kind. And self-compassion also gives you the safety to feel, you know, when, and you could speak to this better than I am sure, but when you have been through trauma and you're healing from trauma, your nervous system sometimes does not believe that it is safe to feel things. And so when you can be kind to yourself and you can say encouraging things and soothe yourself and you're working on calming your nervous system in other ways, it creates the safety to actually start to feel some of these emotions that you're using food to numb. And that can be very powerful.
Are you sure you're not a mental health therapist? you know all the lingo, girl. You do.
I'm very clear about my scope. I will refer, you know, when it is necessary, when people actually need to work through their trauma, but helping people understand how it's impacting food is definitely, you know, my passion because, yeah, as a dietitian, we really should not be just giving people lists of foods to eat and foods not to eat without understanding where they're coming from and why they might be struggling to make these changes, because you really can. And I get this from my friend, Kathleen Putnam, who's the No More Food Trauma Dietitian. So direct from the source, you can re-traumatize people with nutrition.
Say the name of the book one more time.
Yeah. So it's not a book yet, although I will tell her to write that she needs to write one, but Kathleen Putnam at No More Food Trauma. So you can go to nomorefoodtrauma.com. And she would be a great guest for you as well.
Yes.
I'll connect you guys. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Maybe you guys could partner in a book together. That would be pretty powerful too.
We do enjoy working together and having those chats because yes, this work is important. Re-traumatizing people is not okay. So that certainly needs to change. And one last point for everyone out there. We talked about the nervous system. We've talked about self-compassion, but to find that courage to trust, we also need self-connection. And again, dieting, trauma, these things can disconnect us from our bodies. Our bodies may not feel safe, but we'll never be able to tell when we're full or hungry or satisfied, right? Unless we are connected to our bodies. And so, you know, doing some work and paying attention and about, you know, where are we feeling the feelings we're feeling or where are we feeling our hunger or our satiety? You know, is that hunger coming from our stomach or is that hunger coming from our head? Like just taking some time to connect with what we might be feeling. And I'll tell you what, when you start doing that, if you walk away today and you go eat dinner and you're like, okay, I'm gonna just close my eyes for a second and take a breath and kind of think about where am I feeling this hunger or fullness, you might not get anything. It can take some time to develop that connection because when we're dieting, we tell our body we don't care if you're hungry or if you're full. And so the body stops telling you. Dieting also slows down your metabolism. So it can decrease your appetite signals and slow down on your hunger signal or your satiety signals if you're not listening to them. Mm-hmm. You know, the body kind of becomes numb itself. And so, you know, that connection can take some time to build. And yet it is a big part of really learning to trust yourself. And I encourage anyone out there to keep trying. And it'll be probably a little confusing and frustrating at first, and yet connecting with yourself, I think, has been for me one of the biggest wins and gains from going through this whole process, because Now I know what I want and what I like and what I don't want and what I don't like, and living a life where I'm more connected to that has been much more satisfying.
Awesome. I wish I had talked to you sooner. You're making a lot of good suggestions for people that can really help. So, I'm trying to think what would be a really good follow-up question, because I have like 10 in my head. So I'm trying to think, okay, what makes the most sense? So my first question, in terms of inspirational books that you've read that really, I heard you with the self-compassion piece for sure. But are there books in your field that you think really are your top recommendations in terms of this issue with trauma?
Yeah, you know, there are not a lot. I'm looking back at my bookshelf. There are not a lot of books right now, I think, that connect the two that I'm aware of. I really love Brené Brown. And you know, her work, The Atlas of the Heart, just came out, and it's like 80 something different emotions. And it's been, and she talks about how the emotions feel and when they come up. And so for people who are feeling disconnected or they're not sure, I think that's a great resource. Dr. Kristen Neff, her new book, Fierce Self-Compassion, is a great one, because it talks about how you can use self-compassion to actually enact change for yourself. Oftentimes people will feel like self-compassion is a, one person told me, if I'm nice to myself, am I going to give myself a blank check to eat? And I said, ahaha, you might think that, right? And if you don't heal your nervous system and, you know, connect to yourself and your satiety, then maybe you will, because you'll be coming from that place where you're not connected to your body. But in whole, you know, if you follow all of my points, then no, it's not a blank check to eat. Embody by the, I keep looking back at my bookshelf because I have such a hard time remembering authors' names. By Connie Sobzak, I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name, to be honest, is
Embody.
Embody, E-M-B-O-D-Y. That's a nice one for people who struggle with body image. And I like it because it has some, a lot of good like journal questions to really connect to yourself and your feelings around it. But I think, yeah, I think self-compassion resources are really, because self-compassion helps to make you more resilient to stress and to things that happen, so that you don't end up outside of that zone of trust and using food.
Thank you. Again, I think you were maybe a therapist in your past life, even your book selections, right? Like PhD in social work.
Oh yeah. I have all the love for the social workers.
Yeah. Brené Brown's amazing. Dr. Neff well, they're both doctors, Dr. Brown and
yeah,
Dr. Neff are definitely amazing. Embody, I have not read, and I will get to that. That sounds really good. Yeah. Did you have any thoughts about writing your own book?
Someday for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know. You've given us a lot of value today. I hesitate to ask for anything else at this point, but in our time together to wrap up, are there any other words of wisdom that you would have that maybe could instill, you know, seeds of hope into our listeners? Anything else come to mind that we didn't discuss?
Here's what comes up for me as I'm checking in with myself. We often listen to podcasts. I'm a podcast lover. Okay. For information, right? And I think especially around nutrition or health or what have you in particular, it feels like if we don't follow the information that we hear, that there's something wrong with us. So we feel shame for not being perfect. And, you know, I'm speaking for myself, for my clients, what I'm seeing around not following advice. We feel maybe information overload or analysis paralysis, right? Like what advice to follow. And I think this is the beauty of finding the courage to trust and connecting with yourself is you can check in with yourself to see how does that land. And so, you know, I would encourage everyone who's listening to just take a minute, you know, pause our voices for a brief moment, finish listening, but pause for a brief moment and think about what is your takeaway? What's landing with you? What's feeling good in your body? What feels compassionate rather than shaming? And take that with you into your day, you know, enact that one thing. I've given you so much information and I don't want to overwhelm you, but I want to help you connect to yourself and know like what's the best next step for you.
Oh, that was wonderful. It was such a pleasure to have you on. I think anyone listening to you is going to definitely benefit. How could they not, right?
So, I hope so. Yeah. Virtual hugs. That's what I'm giving here.
And they cost nothing.
That's right. That's right.
So if there's a woman listening or women listening that I really, or taking your message to heart, like you're speaking directly to them, it feels, and they want to work with you directly. What's the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah, going to CassieChristopher.net. You can, it says schedule a call with me right on the homepage and you can click that. And we can talk more about what your struggle is and what kind of support I think you need in order to, you know, reach your goals. I have both group and one-on-one individual programs to serve people. And so, yeah, I would love to connect with anyone who is struggling to help you figure out the best next step. And I always say, you know, even if you're like, I think I need help, but I don't know if you're the right person, book a call with me because, I can help you figure out, you know, what the best next step is. And if it's not working with me, I'll let you know, because I want you to heal. And if I can't help you do that, that's okay with me.
Right. Yeah. Cause we want people to want to work with us because it feels like a good fit.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And sometimes people like, I mean, like you've already mentioned, you know, you have, I have a certain presence, but I am not a therapist, you know, so if someone's coming to me and they need to really work through things that happened in their childhood in order to move forward, that's not me. I can help you, you know, move forward from now. But I may refer you, you know, if it's outside of my scope is what I can do as a dietitian.
Right. And I would refer to you too if people ask me a whole ton of things about food. I'm like,
yeah, vegetables are good, got that covered. Yeah. That's awesome. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Cassie, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with our guest today. I hope people found value. I certainly did, and it's been an honor to have you here with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening in today. Please join us next week, same day and time. Also, I would love for you to check out my website, healthrivedream.com.